Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. At some point, most people have been caught off guard by tough interview questions. In Acing the Interview, Tony Bishara, the employment expert Dr. Phil called the best of the best, gives job seekers candid advice for answering even the most unexpected questions. Tony Bishara is a 30-year veteran of the placement and recruitment field and owner of Babich & Associates, a job placement firm. He's appeared numerous times on the nationally syndicated Dr. Phil show. Welcome to Edgewise, Tony.
Glad to be here.
Now, the first question is, what are the unique and important aspects of the changing job market?
Well, average 40-year-old in the United States has changed jobs 10 times every 2 years. First time in the history of business in America that anything like that's happened. The day of career employment is over. We've got outsourcing and offshoring. The world is flat. The economy in the world, it's a world economy. Companies come and go faster than they ever have before. I was reading the other day that in 2006, CEOs in the United States either forcibly left their job or left their job every 6 hours. The tenure of the average company in the United States has gone from 14 years 5 years ago to 10 years.
So there are big changes.
Big changes, faster, furious. The advancement of technology. And on top of that, according to the Department of Labor, by the year 2012, there are going to be 21 million new jobs in the United States and only 17 million new people to fill them. So we're going to see a total change in the complexion of the job market, more so than we have probably in history.
This has a huge impact on job seekers that are looking for new careers or are outplaced.
Yes.
So then in this rapidly changing job market, what are the biggest mistakes that job seekers make when approaching the job-seeking process?
The biggest mistakes that people make, ironically enough, are pretty much the same mistakes they've always made. The top three are they don't make finding a job in itself. 60% of the people out there, I was reading the other day, do two things when they go to look for a job. They contact friends and relatives, and then they sit on the internet and try to send their resume to people over the internet. And then they sit and wait. So that inertia kills them. Number two, they don't develop a system of finding a job where they operate a system. And if they focus on the process, they don't have to worry about the result. But most people focus on the result of getting a job and forget the process. Third, people have a very unrealistic idea about what the market is for their skills. If they look for a job 5 or 6 years ago, it was one thing. It's different today, and they have an unrealistic idea of what the market will bear for them. If people were just aware of those three things, they'd make looking for a job real easy.
Right.
They need to do a lot of research and a lot of interviewing and talking to a lot of people so they find out what's out there, what's available, what's commensurate with their skills. And the only way you do that is to get a lot of interviews. You got to be talking to lots and lots of people. Next to death of a spouse, death of a child, death of a parent, and divorce, the most emotional thing that people do is look for a job. Nobody likes doing it. They're emotionally distressed. They're at dis-ease. So they have a tendency to kind of crawl into their cave and sit there and press that send button on their resume. And they don't get out and run the risk of being rejected and refused to find out what's out there in the marketplace and ask a lot of questions.
Now, in terms of online tools, what are your thoughts on using social networks like Facebook or LinkedIn or some of the others out there? Are they helpful?
LinkedIn is certainly a valuable tool. We use that in part of what we do. The challenge is too many people focus on one thing like that, and they don't take advantage of all of the tools that are available to them. I tell people all the time, get an interview with anybody you can, anybody, for any reason, and do it any way that you can. Pick up the phone and cold call. Use social networks, church networks, friend network, any networks that you've got. Most people don't sit down and write out. I recommend to people, sit down and write out all the people you ever worked with, everybody you knew, your family, relatives. Call them all. Let them know you're looking for a job, you need to change. You'd be shocked at the number of people most people overlook in the process of doing that.
So then it sounds like one of the most interesting things to do just during your career and on a regular basis is keep in contact with all those people you meet along the way.
Absolutely. The average job in the United States is going to last 2.5 to 3 years. Whether you like it or not, you need to be aware that you might be looking for a job every 2.5 to 3 years. Now, I'm not saying I agree. I'm not saying I disagree. I'm just saying that is reality. But companies change their complexion every 3 or 4 years, too. So the dynamics of what's going on out there are just a lot greater than they ever were. People used to say you're going to have 4 or 5 career changes in your life. Hey, it might wind up being 7, 10, 11. You just need to be prepared for that.
Now let's turn to the other side of the desk, the employers themselves. In this changing job market, what are some of the biggest mistakes that potential employers are making when they're actually looking for new workers?
Probably the biggest mistakes that they make are they don't have a plan about how to go out and find people. They don't have a strategy and a system of interviewing and hiring, just like a candidate doesn't have a system of looking for a job. They go out willy-nilly and just ask a few questions, talk to a few people. They don't develop a system of hiring people. Some companies do, but most companies don't. 69% of the companies in the United States have less than 100 people in them. And they don't operate like the Harvard Business School dictates that they do. They operate very much like the people that run them. They are basically ambitious, greedy, selfish, lazy, impatient, vain, and ignorant. The people that run them run their companies willy-nilly, and they hire willy-nilly.
Now, when we get down to the actual interviewing process, when you are a manager or an employer, can you explain the 4 basic questions that should be asked in an interview?
When it comes down to it, whether people admit it or not, the 4 basic things that an employer is asking a candidate are, can you do my job? Do we like you? Are you a risk? And can we work the money out? Now, most people focus on the last one. They think, oh, we got to talk about money. The truth is, if those other 3 questions are answered satisfactorily, the money usually works itself out. No problems with that. Very easy. But can you do the job? Do we like you? Now, 40% of a hiring decision is based on do we like you. Most people don't recognize that, and most employers won't admit it.
Right.
But you're never going to hire anybody you don't like. Most people, when they interview somebody and they really like them, they justify all the rest. Now, the first 20% of the threshold of can you do the job has to be answered. Obviously, you're not going to interview an engineer for an accounting job because he can't do the job. But if you come to the conclusion that pretty much a group of people could do the job, then it comes down to do we like you and are you a risk?
Now, your book's called Acing the Interview. Do you have some specific rules of thumb or those really critical make or break things that you need to do to ace the interview?
First of all, you need to recognize the 4 real questions that an employer is asking. Most candidates think that 85% of a decision about getting hired has to do with can you do the job. Now, we run a real big recruiting firm in Dallas, Texas. We get candidates all the time that get turned down for a job, and they go, but I could do that job. There's no reason in the world that I can't do the job. Well, just because you can do the job doesn't mean you're going to get hired. You have to recognize that doing the job and proving that you can do the job only accounts for 20% of the decision. 40% of the decision is, do we like you? And the other 20% are you a risk and can we work the money out? So if people focused on those 4 things and recognized they need to answer those for the employer, they shouldn't have any problem in being able to get good offers.
We'd like to thank Tony Bishara, author of the book Acing the Interview. Thanks for being with us today.
Anytime.
Hi, I'm Richard Bradley. I'm the Portfolio Manager for Professional and Management Development at the American Management Association. And I'm here with Nanette DeWester, one of our instructors who teaches many programs that are probably relevant to job interviewing. But today in particular, we want to talk about storytelling. Nanette, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard.
Well, we just heard that there's basically 4 things that employers are interested in when they're interviewing somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong here, there was Can you do the job?
Right.
Do I like you?
Mm-hmm.
How big a risk are you going to be? And how much are you going to cost me?
Right.
So how does storytelling fit in with the job interview process?
Mm-hmm.
And if it fits in, does it fit into all of these categories?
The statistic he gave us around those four questions, what struck me the most was that 40% of it was, do I like you?
Right.
So almost half of that equation is, do I like you? Now, when you think about it, how do you know whether you like somebody or not? Well, you can't like somebody, you can't trust them or find them even credible until you know them. And how do you know anybody? Well, over time and process and experience with them. Or you can look at their resume, you get some idea, but how do you really know anybody? That's the real question. And the only way to clearly illustrate that is through telling a story or giving an anecdote or some kind of narrative of how you
Right.
behaved in the past around whatever question they might ask you in an interview.
Should you prepare these stories in advance?
Definitely. In fact, in our storytelling course, there are six types of stories we deal with.
Okay.
One of them is, who are you and why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
right.
they're going to ask you that when you walk in. One of them is your values. What are your values and actions? And what is your vision story? So we've got three big stories right there that if you know what your vision, what your overarching goal is, you're going to be able to position yourself better with that potential employer because they're going to know where you're going if it matches their missions. And you should really do that kind of inventory anyway. If you're looking for a job, are you the right fit? Are they the right fit? Because this is an interview time for you to make sure that they're right for you. And when you position those things and you show yourself through an illustrative process like a story, you can see how they respond to it. And if they're not open to the way you think, then you probably don't belong there.
How do you find the story?
There's many, many ways. There's history. We all have different histories. If you have a journal you keep, but constructively how we work at the AMA with the storytelling course is that there's four buckets which you go into. And these four buckets are a time you shined, a time you blew it, a mentor story, or a book, movie, or current event. If you just look in those four places in your life, you'll be able to see rich stories around your life, your experience, and they can clearly illustrate how you are and how you behave.
Obviously, you've given this a lot of thought with all these buckets and these different types of talks.
I love the course. It's an excellent course. And I have to tell you, anybody that thinks storytelling doesn't have direct business applications is completely wrong because another type of story is a teaching story. And the only way to train someone or to teach them to be a better employee is to tell stories. Tell them when the time you screwed up and the first time you had a job and how you the learning curve period of time. And that way, as a leader, it makes you more accessible. It makes your employees care about you and the job. And it builds relationships, which is what we're talking about, building real relationships by showing yourself, not out of compliance because people are living in fear, but you're really convincing somebody about why they want to do something, why they want to buy your product, or why they want to be motivated to do anything with you in business. So it's a direct application to business.
Thank you very much, Nanette.
You're
welcome. This has been very informative. And of course, I remind everybody that we have the storytelling course at AMA. Just go to amanet.org and you can find the next scheduled class if you're interested and sign up for it.
As always, we'd love to get your feedback, so please drop us an email at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.